Hi, John.
Good evening, everybody. This is Charles. Eddie will be joining us shortly. He just had a little slight delay, but he'll be jumping on here shortly. Matt, how are you this evening?
I am doing rather well. How about yourself?
Doing good, doing good. Getting started here, and not this evening. We had our titanium students come in this afternoon, and so we've got a week with our titanium students, so we're glad to have them here this week. I think it'll be a great learning experience for them, and we're pleased to have them.
How many are in the office last week?
I want to say we have 14 in the office this week. Oh. Yep, so actually Eddie is at dinner with them now, so they should be here. He should be jumping on the call shortly.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and get started. If you want to, Matt.
All right. I've got...
what do we have first up?
First up, we've got a question from Keith, so I'll go ahead and unmute Keith and let him kind of just jump right into it. So, Keith, you're good to go.
Okay.
Hello, you got, hear me? Hello, hello?
Yeah, Keith, how are you? Hey, Keith.
Hey, good. Hi, Charles, how you doing?
Doing good.
All right, so I provided some paperwork with this deal, and this is a note that I bought that was in bankruptcy when I bought it. We talked about it a little bit on the mentor call before I purchased it, just so I kind of felt comfortable with what the bankruptcy looked like, because I have really not a lot of experience in the bankruptcy department. So I was served a mortgage modification, a motion for mortgage modification by the borrower's attorney, and this loan was a prime loan to be modified, and part of my strategy was probably to modify it as anyway. The problem is the attorney, you know, although I presented some reasonable terms, I believe, the attorney on the other side wanted it to be modified with a rate as low as 2% and to re-amortize the thing for a 40-year term. And the attorney that I have is, although I need to get him spun up or ring in a bankruptcy attorney, you know, he was concerned that he might be able to do that because of the bankruptcy law rules. Do you know anything about what I should expect for a mod like this?
Well, if you've got a borrower's attorney pushing back, you definitely want to get a bankruptcy attorney that's familiar with the bankruptcy laws. What state are you in, Keith?
Michigan.
Okay. Now, I'm not sure what the statute is. I've never had somebody, I've had a pushback, and I've done a little bit of negotiation, but not ever to the extent that I went 40 years on my note. I'm not saying that you can't, but I've never been pushed back where I had to go 40 years on my note. And we negotiated a lot of bankruptcies. and 2% rate. I think there's got to be something, at least where you can meet in the middle. And did he read the statute to you?
No, he didn't read it to me. But now the statute isn't the bankruptcy. Isn't that all federally regulated?
It is federally regulated, but there's certain laws. But I've never heard them pushing it down to a 2% rate. Typically you can push back, I think, on that, Keith, as far as trying to negotiate the terms of that bankruptcy. And keep in mind, you're dealing with the borrower's attorneys, so they're going to push it as much as they can push it.
Right. I understand that. So I guess my concern was, you know, I do have a say in this. I don't just have to roll over and play dead and let them take advantage of the situation.
No, you're still the net holder. You still have the lien on that property. You don't have to say, okay, if you say so. No, you don't. But I would definitely get an attorney on my side that knew. I would definitely get an attorney on my side that knew the bankruptcy laws.
Okay. I see Mr. Speed is on the picture. Hey, Eddie, how you doing?
What's up, buddy?
Not much. Have you had any luck or experience dealing with modifying bankruptcy loans when a borrower requests modification?
Now, Keith, let me ask you this, because somebody just posted a good question. Actually, Ryan just posted a question. Does the 2% have to do with the arrearage rate rather than the rate on the loan?
No. And I'm tracking two different balances. There's a arrearage balance, and then there's a normal balance. And I guess one of my strategies was try to raise the take it out of bankruptcy, because the arrearages haven't really been paid. Although they've been making the regular payments, the arrearages delinquency is back over a year or a year and a half old.
So there's not any payments coming from the trustee at all?
Well, those payments are coming from the trustee, but how my servicer has always posted them is everything's been going against the mortgage, and just occasionally there's an arrearage payment. So it shows that according to my servicer to be like 400 days delinquent for the arrearage account.
What does the plan call for?
A regular payment, a monthly payment.
From the borrower plus arrearages from the trustee?
That's correct.
But you're not seeing that.
No. So, you know, I guess a part in my view, I mean, I'm willing to work with these people when I look at their whole payment history. They are trying to make it good. But you know, I want to get them on paying on time, so it's a good investment for everybody.
Right.
So this is their plan. Yeah. This is their Chapter 13 plan I sent off to you. And
the attorney you're using now, though, he's not a bankruptcy attorney.
No, he's not a bankruptcy attorney, and I had the discussion with him. He's a really good guy, really good attorney. But you know, I told him, I said, listen, we need to find a bankruptcy attorney, and you can co-counsel with him on this thing, but you know, I need somebody that knows the law, and I guess I wasn't aware that there may be state statutes that govern bankruptcy too, or are they all federal?
No, I believe they're all federal, Keith. Again, I've always had a bankruptcy attorney that I've used, and you know, I would definitely find me a bankruptcy attorney. You need somebody that's going to know the law, especially if the borrower's attorney's pushing back now, trying to negotiate, you know, a lower rate and a 40-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, occasionally we've had students that have come on the call and been in certain states, like Mahmoud's had an asset in New York City, and it went through bankruptcy. And the attorney says, well, the bankruptcy court didn't this and that. And there's some kind of, you know, idea they're saying that it was local, you know, some kind of a local precedence, federal law, but some kind of local court precedence. But I'm going to tell you this. I would not think you're going to have to agree to anything that they're saying. And you need a bankruptcy attorney that's going to do you a good job. What is this in Detroit?
No, this is actually in Midland, Michigan, which is okay. up mid-state.
Okay. Anyway, that's what I would do, because you don't hear Charles and I going, oh yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, right, and that's kind of what I was looking for. Do you guys have any experience? It's Chapter 13. Yeah, you got to roll over, and you know you're going to take 2% and stretch down for 40 years. You know, but
yeah, right. No, that's not the way it really works. And I definitely would get me a BK attorney that knew the law there.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
I don't know that anybody would come back and take 2% for 40 years, Keith. I just don't see anybody doing that.
Right. Well, they said, well, the HARP, you know, the HARP guidelines, it can go. I said, great, you have them refinance on a HARP. I mean, that's, you know, HARP's a new loan. I mean, it's not a remodification of an existing loan.
See, that's the first sign of weakness I've heard from the attorney. Is he don't say? I mean, he's just telling you this, and he's comparing it to other things. I mean, I've been thinking all along when I've been hearing you say it, this guy's full of crap. But that really tells me he's full of crap.
Well, that's what I believe. I don't think this guy really knows the law himself. He knows a little piece here and a little piece there, and is trying to take advantage of what he thinks he knows. And the guy I have, again, he's done me a really good job on all the notes and stuff. It's real pretty knowledgeable. But when it comes to bankruptcy, I think that's a completely whole different part of the law. And you know, he's scared. And I said, I told him, I said, hey, don't be scared. let's get somebody that knows what's going on.
Okay. All right. Let us know what happens.
I sure will. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Matt. What's up?
All right. Well, we have a few questions that came on the board. I don't know if you saw those or not.
So, I can't get my questions to pop up tonight.
Hold on a second. Let me see. That's because you only came in as a panelist. So you don't have full access to everything. I don't know if you need that or not. I'm just kidding. There you go. You should be able to see them all.
Hell yeah. I got you now, baby. All right. What we got?
Terry was asking if the SAFE Act applies to modifications.
In what way?
Maybe I can get her. Terry, can you kind of explain what you're asking there? Got you unmuted just in case. Maybe they don't have a mic.
Oh, yeah, well, we have a former bankruptcy. We have a former bankruptcy court clerk in our presence tonight.
Nice.
How about that?
Yep,
he's basically saying that. Basically saying the courts take a dim view of borrowers trying to get the lender to do an unrealistic modification.
Keith, there's your answer.
All right. Let's see. Yeah, he's saying, though, specifically you need to respond to the motion. Great help there, Mr. Horgan. Okay.
All right, so next up, see if I can pull Mark over here.
Mark, can you hear me?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, Eddie, how are you?
Very good. All right, what we got?
So I'm looking at a note. I think it's bankruptcy night.
No, it's rap note night. It was rap note night. We had like four questions or five questions on rap notes, and now bankruptcy's got me all messed up. This is the wrong call for bankruptcy.
It's a performing note, kind of, sort of.
What you got?
There's a boyfriend and girlfriend living in the house, and they're both on the note. It's a land contract. The boyfriend's filed bankruptcy. He's missed a few of the post-petition payments, like 4 months in a row, but he's making them again. My concern is, what is my out if he doesn't follow through with the bankruptcy and I have to take the property back? It's a 4-acre parcel with a manufactured home, can't get good pictures of it. The BPO, I'm thinking I probably need another BPO because the current one's from July, maybe.
You just have to get a discharge of that bankruptcy and proceed with foreclosure. If he doesn't pay, it's agreed.
He doesn't have a lot of payments that he has to make according to the bankruptcy agreement, I don't think. The biggest thing is he settled with the IRS for $60,000 in back taxes. How does that come into play in the bankruptcy? It's not in the petition.
I don't know.
Not in the plan?
Not that I could see.
I think the IRS would be a creditor if he had $60,000 settlement with them. They would be a creditor.
Yeah. Have they confirmed the plan?
I believe they have.
Okay.
Yes, they have.
All right, so he is paying you the regular principal and interest payment again, and also he's probably paying some form of an arrearage, right?
Yeah, the arrearage account was only $1,100. It's very small.
Which means he didn't miss very much before he started paying you again.
Correct.
Okay, so are your payments coming to you directly or coming through the trustee?
We haven't actually bought the note from you yet. This is a Colonial note that we are probably going to buy. This would be our second note ever purchased, and there seems like a lot of education in this one. And I'm trying to get some profit with it as well as education.
Megan, do you know this asset?
I've got a few bankruptcies in this this month's offering, Eddie.
But these are performing bankrupts.
These are performing bankruptcies, yeah.
All right. Mark, I'm gonna tell you this, okay? As crazy as this sounds, and listen, it's buyer beware, okay? I'm not telling you to buy it, okay? Because we own it, and I'm trying to sell it to you, okay?
Yeah.
But I will tell you this: if it's reestablished a bankruptcy payment, it's better than somebody that's never filed bankruptcy.
What does it mean if he paid three post-petition payments in April, May, and June, then he skipped four, and then he started paying again in November? Does that mean anything?
Well, if the payments are coming to a trustee, the trustee doesn't always remit monthly. I've learned that. But if he's making payments, he should be making his regular payments. I'd have to go back and look at the plan and actually look at the pay history on this deal. I reviewed one with one of our students today on the phone, and there was post-petition and pre-petition payments being made on this loan, but trustees don't always remit on the first of each month.
But what you're saying is this guy basically skipped making payments and then got caught back up and started paying again.
He started paying again. He did not make up the four payments that he skipped.
I got it. So it's had some status of sub-performing performance.
Okay. This is something I guess that I'd need that I might, if I foreclose on the property, if I were to foreclose on the property, I would get National Asset Advisors involved and try and...
I would. That's what I would do.
And they'll help with any minor rehab or clean out that needs to happen with these people. And
let me tell you this, Mark. If we own this asset ourselves, that's what we're going to get them to do for us. That's the best answer I can give you.
Okay. That's what I'm looking for. What you would do with it?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, it's got. I see your notes here. It's got a really good return. It's just there's some element of risk with it. You know, I don't. You know, the fact that they're paying through a bankruptcy plan really to me is
a good thing?
I don't. Well, I mean, like I said, they can't file Chapter 13 again.
Right.
So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Matt, what's up?
All right. Instead of Barb. Let's check to make sure Barb's on tonight. Oh, there she is. Oh. Barbara? Barb?
Hello.
There you are.
We can hear you. Barbara, how you doing?
I'm good.
Glad to have you.
What can I do?
Can you hear it? Can you hear us?
Yes.
All right. All right. So I know you've sent us a nice little write-up here, but you know me, I always like just to tell the story. It's easier to follow. So kind of give us the cliff notes of where we're at.
To be honest, I think you must have picked the wrong barber.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Not a problem. Well, I'll be glad to talk to you, but I didn't submit anything.
No, Barb submitted a very detailed report, so we're going to stick with her tonight.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's funny.
So, I thought this was, she said actually sent the other day, so does seem like that she is not going to be able to be on today's call, which is why she filled everything out so thoroughly. So,
all right. Well, you read the Matthew and let's figure out where we're at.
Okay. So they are selling an existing home that they have a rental property for about 6 years in Pennsylvania. It's an Allentown. Uh-huh. They have a buyer in mind who looked at the property, but they have one small issue. They're willing to put down $7,000 on a $70,000 purchase price, but the IRS has held up their return or their refund for unknown reasons. They had some issues. So the IRS kicked out their process, so they're not going to be able to do the down payment for up to 4 months until they see their refund to do the down payment. So what the buyer has agreed to do is basically $7,000 on a $70,000 down. They are going to be able to put what looks like $1,000 up front immediately from some of their relatives, and $2,000 at the time of the move in and move out from her current rental location. She's saying, I understand this could decrease if the current landlord holds some of the security deposit back. So she's basically going to keep the security deposit to put down on, so basically to come up with and then they're getting $3,000 at the end of March coming from a sale finance contract for deed in Puerto Rico. Same arrangement done with her selling her at Allentown property. Not sure. I'm not following that. Sure.
Okay. Okay. All right, well, it says continued, so I'm going to – is that all her issue?
So it's the consideration from their perspective. So this kind of gets down to the grid of it. So their current tenant has to the end of March to move out, and they were considering allowing the buyer to move in at the same time as the move out with the $3,000 in cash in hand. They were wanting to use a land contract to be owed and remaining – we will use a land contract – and be owed the remaining $4,000 down payment or more, could be as high as $10,000, depending on the number three, which is above, which is, I think is the getting their money back. The buyer has agreed to take the house in whatever condition the current tenant leaves it, because they really want the house. The only questions are major damage to plumbing or heating, if the plumbing isn't working or the heating's not working. Their goal is to get transferred out of our name, including utilities, insurance, and taxes as soon as they can, and not have any liability for the repairs, maintenance, renovations, etc. For these reasons, we want to come up with a way to make this work for the buyer, and we are looking for suggestions on how to structure the deal to protect ourselves and our buyers. So suggestions other than what we've mentioned here on how to structure the deal. They would prefer not to lease it to them until the funds come through. They want to sell it, and they're taking she's wanting to know, are they taking unnecessary risks by doing this? And do you have any idea how to wrap this up and to be protected as much as possible and let them move in a while and start paying a mortgage? So.
All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw in my 2 cents, and Charles, I'll let you throw in yours after that, okay?
Okay.
I would not sell it to them, even a land contract, until they come up with the full down payment. I don't understand what the difference is from their perspective in doing a lease with an option versus doing a land contract, neither one of which are going to get the title out of their name. So I think you can do a lease option that says absolutely guaranteed that they're, you know, keeping the, you know, they're accepting the property in an as-is condition, and they're responsible for any repairs. And I think, you know, that you put a drop-dead day in it, and that they've got to finish their down payment. Now, you can give them a little room or whatever, but I mean, I understand that if you don't record the land contract and all that stuff, then, you know, it's like a termination, but it's always easier just to have them in a lease agreement with an option than give them any kind of a theory of a court of equity. A court of equity means that the money that they paid could be treated somehow as equity in the property and could somehow delay the foreclosure. And I don't know what the – Charles could be more specific about exactly what the foreclosure law is on land contract, but I just wouldn't do it that way. And I don't see that you're materially changing any of your risk or transferring anything from a land contract to a lease option. I don't see what you're gaining. I don't see the benefit of doing it that way, I guess is what I'm saying. All right, Mr. Mangan, what do you think?
Well, I'll agree with you with that, Eddie. You know, of course, a couple of little red flags. Of course, our tax returns held up by the IRS, so that kind of gives me a red flag. Why is it being held up by the IRS? I understand they want to get taxes and insurance, everything out of their name, where they're responsible for any repairs on the property. But like you said, if they don't record the land contract, it's still in their name. So, I agree that I would do a lease option until I at least got my full down payment.
Okay.
Then if they do the land contract, still, if they want everything out of their name, they're going to have to record that land contract.
Which we wouldn't do.
We wouldn't do, right. Right.
Okay.
We would not record the land contract. But, you know, and then, of course, in most states, if you record the land contract, you're going to have to go through a foreclosure process on that land contract. So, I mean, I would definitely want my down payment first.
And Charles?
Yeah, here's the other thing. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought you finished. I'll let you finish. Sorry about that.
No, and if they're struggling with coming up to $7,000, if they move in the house and the plumbing's busted, where are they going to get the money to fix the plumbing? I mean, you know, sometimes it doesn't pay just to walk away and think you get it all out of your name, because if there's major repairs and the borrower can't pay for it, then you got another problem there.
So once again, I'm just saying from a liability perspective, or, you know, hey, utilities or whatever, I just don't know what they're gaining by doing it that way. And the bottom line is, I'm agreeing with Charles. As soon as you said the IRS is holding up their money, it's like, really? What? Either they were over-optimistic, or there's some issue there they're not really telling.
So in the letter that she laid out, that the reason why the IRS was holding back is there was some identity theft that forced a kickback from the return. Is what the reason they gave her as to why there was a hold up on the.
It doesn't matter. They just need to get their skin in the game. It doesn't matter. I'm sure.
What happens if they come March and they can't come up to $3,000?
Yeah.
and you already got this land contract made out, and they're paying by land contract that you're $3,000 short because they don't have the money in March.
Hey, Mangan, there's this country music station that I listen to driving to work in the morning.
Yeah.
And there's this part of their radio show, their morning radio show. You're gonna have to mute there, Mangan. Sorry. There's a part of this radio show that's the deal is they call it second date update. So these people have a first date, and then all of a sudden the person that they're trying to go on a second date with won't call them back. And so now it's become very popular in Dallas-Fort Worth, and so all these people from other radio stations have heard about it, and they go on there just to go. They don't want to listen to the normal, you know, radio show, but they want to go participate. So this morning, I've been telling Martha all this funny stuff that happens on there. This morning they had this old boy, and he says, "Hey man, I had this date and it was going really good. We went and had hamburgers, and then we had a couple of drinks, and then everything was going so good. We went to the movies. And I don't know what happened, man. It was just beautiful. And she didn't call me back. I don't know what." And so the radio disc jockeys, there's a couple of ladies on there, and they're like asking really hard questions because they've seen too many times people don't tell the whole dang truth. "Oh, no, nothing happened. It was all good." So then they call this lady on the phone and ask her what happened. She goes, "Well," she said, "I just decided I didn't want to go out with that guy anymore," because she says he was supposed to pick his kids up. And, well, you know, then all of a sudden the date was going good, and so he's calling his ex-wife, said, "Hey, man, I'm still picking him up tonight. I'm going to pick him up in the morning." And then they got in a fight over text, and then he went in the bathroom and screaming and yelling at her and stuff like that. I just didn't want to deal with somebody like that. Anyway, sometimes these buyers, Mangan, will not tell you the whole story. It has happened.
On occasion.
On an occasion. Trust but verify. So
exactly.
Give them the documents when they give you the dough.
When you're listening to their conversation or their excuse, always listen for the red flags. Those red flags in the conversation.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, Barb, you got our 2 cents on that. Hope that helps. All right, Mr. Matt. We haven't even got to the raps tonight. This was rap night. What happened?
Well, I'm not sure. Actually, I don't know that I actually saw that. I may have to look back at it real quick. Let me see if Karen's on the...
Yeah, this is their deal. This is their rap question.
Gotcha. Karen? So Todd is... Todd? Karen?
Yeah, we're here.
We just
hey, guys.
How
you
doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
All right, so I'm going to let you paraphrase your story. You basically... This is a loan that you have... Correct, with a community bank?
Yes.
And it's a house that you've kind of used with a credit line so you can operate your other real estate and note investing business, right?
Right. We take money out, we take cash out to buy, we fix it, and then we refi it and put it back out. So there's constant in and out of that HELOC.
Okay. So when you say a HELOC, is this like a – but it's a local community bank that you have a relationship with?
Yes.
Well, just go to the banker and ask him for permission to wrap it.
Well, that's what we did today, believe it or not. We actually thought, we went and talked to her today, and I think they don't seem scared about it at all. So the attorney just is scared.
Let me state it. If they give you permission to wrap it, then the attorney concern is over.
Right. We just need to find somebody that's going to be willing to do the paperwork, whether that's NAA or...
Look. if the bank is going to give you written permission to wrap it, the attorney's concern is over. Right?
Well, not really, because his concern is if the buyers really understand what they're getting into, because they've been renting for about 4 years, they love the house, they could make payments for 10, 15 years on a 20-year loan. We could keep the line maxed out, and, you know, I mean, we would have no intention of doing that, but he is afraid of something like that happening and exposing his title company and law firm to liability.
And us.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Fire the attorney.
Yeah. He's a good guy, just not in this area, obviously.
I meet a lot of people I like. That don't mean that I want to, you know, hire them to be the competent professional to dig me out of some little situation.
Right.
He's not your guy. Okay.
Right.
You can do, your National Asset Advisors can do it. There is specific language. By the way, I just went through this with another situation. It's like there's very specific language that their attorney firm has to have in the agreement. It's not negotiable. That's what it is. Okay? But they can do it. They can do it as a wrap.
Right, but what specific language are you talking?
I don't know what it is. It's like I'm not going to get that granular level. No, there's disclosures that they're going to require in there. It's going to say there's a wrap, and you know the buyer acknowledges and understands, or something like that. I don't know what. I don't know exactly what it says, but I just went through this with another student. That's why I'm telling you, it's not negotiable. Because I just went through that where it's like, well, I don't know. And it's like, no, it's a cookie cutter deal. But they can do it. There is a lag time, okay? So if you hire them as an RMLO, just because you found the buyer doesn't mean they vetted the buyer. You get that? Now, let me ask you a different question. Are you subject to Dodd-Frank?
Well, that's what that's what Melissa at the bank was saying. She says she doesn't even see how it is subject. She's working with a couple of other clients do the same thing. She said they drive her crazy because they'll let him make a repair on the house and he'll knock X amount of dollars off the amortization. She has to redo the whole thing. So she's pretty sure that they're not going to worry about some due on sale or anything like that.
Well, you're going to want that in writing, okay? Because old Melissa ain't got a lifetime contract to work at that bank in a decision-making position.
Right. She's going to CC us on the emails, so we have something in writing.
Okay. You understand, this is a very clear litmus test, okay? This is very clear litmus test. If you're a dealer, meaning that you sell more than 3 properties a year in any family of entities that you have an interest in, doesn't matter about land trust, doesn't matter about different corporations, doesn't matter about self-directed retirement accounts, it doesn't matter. If you do any family of entities that sells and finances more than three properties a year to a consumer, then you have to be compliant with Dodd-Frank.
Okay. This is the only one we are going to do this way. The rest are going to be funneled through NAA.
Okay. Well, that doesn't mean you're not going to underfinance them.
Well, that's true, but we're using them to do the whole...
I got it, but you threw a monkey wrench in it when you told me that.
Okay.
Okay, you are intending to finance more than 3 properties a year, right or wrong?
Well, yeah.
Okay, well then now to be safe, I believe that you need to be compliant.
Okay, so would you, Eddie, in our case, would you contact NAA or try to find a local attorney or?
Well, NAA knows more about handling land contracts and the specificity of wrap language you get into some deal, you go to the title company and stuff, it's like this is like a moonship to them, right? And it just it's just that's why we don't fool with those guys. We fool with specialist attorneys like Jeff Watson, like Guardian, like NAA's group of lawyers. I mean, we deal with specialists. I don't go down to the local title company in South Lake, Texas and try to explain to them what the hell a land contract is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because we just had our head beat against the wall too much. You know? So the deal, though, I'm going to tell you is this, okay? Because I've had this happen a couple of times. Just because you have the buyer doesn't mean that they have vetted the buyer. In order to be compliant, they have to vet the buyer. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he's
that's part of the compliance. It doesn't matter. They have to vet him. That's what makes it compliant.
So it's regardless
of putting their they can't just go put their license on something that say it's a vetted loan when they haven't vetted it.
Okay, but Eddie, when you say vetting it, his credit score is in the 500s. He's self-employed. His income is up and down, up and down. We just know that
Okay, well, then I'm telling you right now that he may not vet.
And if he doesn't, then what?
Then he's a tenant. Welcome to America.
Yeah.
It ain't your fault. You didn't tell him not to pay taxes, did you? You see what I'm saying? It's like it's his situation. They're going to do it, but they've got to make a compliant loan. That's the whole point of Dodd-Frank. He's got to qualify. And it's not under Fannie Mae standards. Okay, he didn't have to qualify for Fannie Mae standards, but they still have to vet his income. You can't take his income and take 95% of his income to go towards his house payment.
Right, and we're not.
Well, but I'm just saying. I'm giving you the deep drill that they're going to give you, okay? And I'm helping them there because I've had some students that were confused about this, that just because they're, you know, that you've found the buyer doesn't mean that they can legally approve the buyer. That's what you're hiring them to do.
But you're saying, Eddie, even if we just do this one on our own, and then do half dozen more that NAA manages the whole thing the rest of the year because of the volume, we're a dealer.
Charles, help me out here. I don't want to cause them work. Would you be scared of that?
I would. Yeah. Yeah. I mean
I am too. Because it's fully your intentions to be a dealer. You see what I'm saying? And they can prove that you are. I mean, see what I'm saying? You already know that you're going to do more transactions than are going to. You know that you're going to get pushed into the dealer status.
Okay.
I mean, if you did one with a borrower that didn't qualify, and then NAA does five or six more for you. If you were to come in, and I'm not saying you would ever get audited, but if you did, they would look at that. Why did you do this one, and then NAA do these other five or six, and the one you did didn't qualify. They weren't even close to qualifying. I mean, it could happen.
But what about backing it up with the pay history from the tenant? Because they've been in our property for 4 years. Does that stuff weigh in at all?
You need to call Mr. Frank and Mr. Dodd on that. You tell those freaking idiots to change the law because I didn't make it.
Yeah. So in this case, we need to have since the local attorney is not comfortable, we need to just have them vetted. And
I'm just telling you, if you hire an RMLO and they don't vet the buyer, then I don't know what they're doing that makes it compliant. Now, Charles knows more about that than I do, but I don't know what that is. So there's a delay because they're going to have to go vet the buyer. Now, you don't have to go find them, but you got to go vet them. And your guy's got to send the stuff in he's supposed to send in. Let me ask you a question. Is the buyer, is the tenant who has a lease option, is he that stirred up about converting the documents?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Is who's pushing here? You or them?
Well, I mean, they want to own the house.
You got lease option, just renew their lease option and go on. But they're going to have to qualify. Okay. Even if you owner finance them, they got to qualify, and you got to tell them that.
Yeah.
The law does not allow you just to sell to anybody.
Right.
If they don't like that, they need to change who they vote for.
Right.
I'm being smart aleck at that point.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm sorry. It drives me nuts. And you're right. You've asked all these logical questions. It drives me crazy. They got a pay history with you for 4 years. Why can't you sell to them?
Yeah.
That's why we're trying to get the law changed, by the way.
Right. Well, I mean, we could. We could just do it. You know.
Why would you take the risk? Why would you dare take the risk?
Right.
I mean, I would say that you need to get some indication of what kind of income they have, and then you could have a conversation with NAA and figure out whether they think it's close. But we went through this with a few assets. Charles and I and Bob did with them last week. And this was specifically the issue. It's like, okay, just because find the buyer doesn't mean we can accept the buyer. Otherwise, we're not being compliant with what we're licensed to do.
Right.
So, you asked a great question.
And I'm sure the bank that you're doing this rap with, your bank, would want a compliant loan.
Well, she doesn't seem too concerned about it. But, again, she's a pretty sharp lady. She's the branch manager, but she's got to talk to the corporate office in Chattanooga, and she's supposed to get back with us.
That banker doesn't understand what your obligations are under Dodd-Frank and seller financing.
No, she doesn't.
I bet you $50,000 she doesn't know.
No, she.
I mean, she's sweet. I mean, she's trying to help you, but it's not her field of unique knowledge.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay.
I think what you hear from Charles and I is don't give up. I get it. You're feeling all pressured up over this. We're going.
We were ready to sign with him. That, you know, the attorney told us for 10 days, you know, he'd be ready to go. He'd be ready to go. And then we were supposed to sit down with him literally that day or the next day. So, but that's fine. I mean, that's just, they're just going to have to deal with it, and they're fine. I mean, they're reasonable people, or seem to be.
Yeah. I mean, just renew their lease option and then go dig in and see whether it looks like you got a chance to repaper it, as long as the bank signs off on it. If they don't, and if even the bank signs off on it, but somebody as an RMLO representing you can't qualify them, then you're just going to have to stick where you're at. It's not illegal to do a lease option.
Right. Well, we need to get them vetted, I guess, with NAA, if that's who you would recommend. They seem, I mean, that's who we're working with right now. So, and then, and if they can't do it, then they're just going to have to buckle down and try harder to get to where they can buy it. So, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Appreciate the call.
We appreciate you.
All right, we had a bunch of stuff on rap notes. So, Matt, let's stay in that vein there, brother.
All right, let's see. Actually, I might have missed that. I didn't see any other content that came in on rap. So do you know who sent it in, and I can pull it up real quick?
I don't know. We had some that was forwarded from help desk or whatever, but it may not have followed the all the typical chain. Let's see, Matt.
I do have a question from Chandler here, so I can look at that while you're doing that real well, while you're answering.
Okay, yeah, sure, let's do that. It's fine.
Chandler, go ahead.
Hey, Eddie.
How you doing, bud?
I hate to break the seriousness of everything, but I have probably a very amateur question. But,
oh, we're not serious at all here, brother.
That's good. All right, then I'll fit in.
By the way, we took the titaniums tonight to Babes, so I'm sure that you probably needed to wash them off before they left there. But
get that barbecue smoke taste off. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, yeah, you took them to Roanoke then. Good deal.
That's right. But just so you guys know, Babes is like a place that has like family-style chicken, fried chicken and chicken fried steak. And Chandler, if you don't know him, is a very health-conscious type of guy. And I just thought I'd have a little fun with him. That's right over there by his house.
Yes, and I don't go there either. So
That does not shock me.
I get sick when I eat that smoked chicken. Anyway, I got good news, and that is the fact I got people who want notes. So I've taken y'all's advice, got everything kind of set up with the group to do that, and have done some marketing. And I actually have people who want me to put them in passive investments. And I kind of need to see or feel or taste, because actually I got several of these calls tomorrow. Okay. The process of, they say, hey, here's the money, and I set it up where they get the first lien position and everything that they need, which I assume is like a partial, so I'm protecting their interest, but yet at the same time I still have an interest in the note, not just a commission. But the paperwork behind the scenes is what Chandler is so unfamiliar with. I mean, my background was as a chiropractor. I wouldn't know how to swing a hammer, never have. So I'm trying to get that deal part down and the paperwork part down. And Eddie, that's my struggle.
All right. Well, this is a work in progress, okay? But Martha has been working with a law firm that can handle that paperwork for you. I don't know if it's a done deal. I know that we've been working on it. We have met. Martha has met with them on a few occasions because we've had some people that request it. And I don't want to barrage Martha, but Chandler, because you brought it up, if you'll contact Martha tomorrow, I think she'll help you work it out. And if you're willing to be a slight guinea pig, then it sounds like we maybe got something to do. And they're basically taking the documents that relate to the partial and the documents that do that, and they're going to, like, draft all the stuff for you.
Perfect. That's exactly what I want. So that's awesome.
Keith Warrington brought it up less than about a month ago, and he said, I really need this, and we said, that sounds like a worthy thing, and so we reached out, and it's actually Guardian Law is who it is. It's the same guys that do other legal work for us. But Martha's going to have to kind of grease it through a couple of deals for them to kind of make sure that they do, they're smart guys, but this is something that's very specialized, and we just have some experience with it. They're really the lawyer, and we're not, but we've had more experience in these documents.
Perfect. All right. So by doing that, then we can go through them and they can help us set that up correctly.
Just to tell everybody else on the call, I'm just giving Chandler a very, very temporary fix so that Martha has agreed to work through it with them, and then it'll be on the membership site, and that obviously nobody will be contacting Martha to be the liaison of it.
Well, and if I miss something on the membership site, let me know. I've just been scouring it for weeks
well,
to
we've
be
been,
prepared.
We've been,
I can't nope, find what I
we've
need.
Been working on it behind the scenes, Chandler.
I appreciate you so much, and I will call Martha in the morning, so thank you. I will sleep better tonight.
All right, cool. Good to see you, Chandler. All right. Barbara had a wrap question. Matt, did you find it there, my friend? Matthew?
Sorry, I have myself muted. Barbara, I have you unmuted if you want to go ahead. And I'm looking for her wrap question.
Barbara, can you hear us? Are you trying to unmute yourself? Barbara.
Oh, she's calling in, so give it just a second. And I know she had that the first question was hers, so maybe I missed it thinking it was her question.
We had some very similar stuff on wraps. So one thing that I would tell you, and I caught this in Todd and Karen's first question, is this is a bank they have a local relationship with. So it's different than doing that and wrapping some gigantic bank's loan that your loan ends up in Never Never Land. So this bank would, you know, you don't want to soil the relationship with the loan officer that's giving you this line of credit. So that's kind of a little bit different relationship angle than the other one. Okay, Barbara, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good. All right, so okay. I'm sorry, we're digging for your question here, but as you know, I'd rather just hear the story anyway.
Yeah, I wish I had that in front of me too right now. I just got back from a meeting, so I'm getting into this game a little bit late tonight. Let's see. I had it in front of me.
This is a wrap note question, was it not?
Yes. Okay, so I had several questions, one of which not directly related to a wrap in particular, but having insurance on my part and also on the buyer's part for a wrap mortgage, is there any way that I don't have to carry insurance when they have insurance without my bank balking about that?
Did you read that article I told you to read?
I don't know if I heard you say that.
So when you sent that to me, didn't we respond back and I said yes, and we have a link from Dykes Botterford's website that kind of talks about that?
I don't think I saw that email.
All right, I'm
but
sorry.
I am going to see him in Atlanta this weekend.
We're going this weekend, yes.
Well, Dykes, if you just look at his website, it's assets101.com. He's under articles. There's an article of in his section of financing where he kind of talks about it. Let me tell you something. I don't have a fix for it. Dykes Botterford doesn't have a fix for it. Jeff Watson doesn't have a fix for it. There's no legal way to have a fix for it. When you wrap a loan that the underlying debt has a due on sale clause, you are busting a covenant in that security agreement. That's as simple as it gets. Okay. And if they decide to call the note, even if you sell on a land contract, you're busted. So we can call it something else, and you know, first of all, let me ask you a question. If you go get insurance on a house and tell somebody that you own it, yet it's occupied with somebody else that has a land contract with you, what's the insurance company going to say if it burns down?
Yeah, I know. I was just hoping I could somehow assign with the buyer purchased.
I don't believe insurance is assignable.
Yeah.
Well, you can do something like put their name and your name as your interest may appear, and you can do all that kind of stuff, and you can, you know. It needs to show you as a non-owner occupant. You darn sure don't want to get insurance and act like you're going to live there.
Oh, no.
No.
Okay. That was never even entered my thought pattern.
Not
an option. Dyke's article suggests in there that you are doing it as your interest may appear. Okay.
Could we then just have insurance for the amount of the loan as opposed to the amount of the value of the house?
Wait a minute. Are you selling this property?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Are you wanting to get paid back?
Of course.
Of course.
Okay, well, if the house burns down, that's the only way you're going to get paid back. You see what I'm saying? In other words, don't you're sort of shorting yourself, and I don't want you to do that. You're the bank. You need to act like you're the bank. You need to be confident. Right. I make this loan, by God.
Well, yeah, the buyer has their insurance, which will cover their loan to us. And then from those proceeds, I was hoping to be able to pay our loan off with our bank.
Yeah, well, your bank ain't going to be happy at all if they're not listed as first loss payee on the insurance policy.
Yep.
Okay? And the trip switch is that they look in there and there's somebody that is insured and it's not you, and particularly if it lists you as a second loss payee. That's pretty clear to the bank, if they're looking, that you sold the house.
Right.
So Dykes says – do it where it's like John Doe buyer and the guy that's seller financing as their interest may appear and all this kind of stuff. And that's a great recommendation. I mean, he just happened to have written an article about it. Somewhere in our archives we got one, but we're going to have Dykes come teach this one-day bonus class for our summer summit that they're going to do for charity. So I just happened to be talking to Dykes about that, and it just came when your questions came in. He's asking about insurance, but there's nobody's got a fix for it. You've got a covenant in the underlying lien that says you're not going to sell it or convey it without paying them off. That's called a due on sale clause.
Yeah, so we're just going to be double insured.
No, I'm telling you, I would not do that.
No, I'm just saying that the house is double insured by us and by
I would not do that. I'm telling you, I would not do that. That is a completely different legal position. You're telling the bank that you're insuring the house, but you're not telling the insurance company the real premise under which you're insuring the house. And that gives them if something catastrophic happens, that's a whole different level. Now, I'm not an insurance guy, but I would have concerns about doing that. Not just that you're paying double insurance premiums, that you're paying insurance premium, your buying's paying insurance premium. It's that who's going to pay the claim if the house burns down?
Okay. So there's
Here's Ryan. You're a little slow there, cowboy. I'm having fun. You know, Ryan's our resident insurance expert, right? All right, so here's what he says. Additional insured would also be the endorsement of the insurer would recognize. There are only needs for one policy. Insurable interest is in the doctrine. Okay? So additional insured is what Ryan is the wording he's using. And he's not your attorney, and he didn't play one on TV, but I will assure you he knows the insurance business.
In whose policy, though?
One policy. You don't have two policies.
So keep the one that I have for my bank, and the homeowner, the buyer, doesn't have to have one?
But Ryan is saying that your borrower's policy would name you as additional insured.
Yes, which it does. But that's not going to satisfy my bank.
Okay. Well, there you go. I'm telling you that what you're doing this other way is not going to – this is not what we would recommend.
I'm just unclear as to how to fix it, though.
One policy from the buyer. What's your buyer's name?
Frank.
Frank, blah, 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 and additionally insured. What entity do you own this property in?
In my LLC.
And list your entity. Wherever the bank's loan, whoever the same name the loan's in the bank. That's how you do it. There's one policy. You're listed as additionally insured.
And my bank is also listed as additional insured.
No, that's a loss payee. That is not additionally insured. That is a lender's loss payee clause. That's not the same.
Okay. Let's pay E to my bank. And additional insured to me. Okay, I think I got it now.
That makes sense.
And that should satisfy my bank because their name's on there. Lost payee.
Yeah, so Paul's going to have to get
your bank is listed as first lien holder as lost payee.
He's going to be the first lien holder, lost payee, and we're going to be additional interest.
I'm going to tell you this. There is elements of risk to this. Okay? So if your guy currently living in the house torches it, you ain't going to get no money. Your bank will, but you're not.
And I can live with that at this point anyway, because we owe about what it's worth.
Okay. I'm just, there is that element of risk. But that's basically how you do it.
Okay. Awesome.
All right, so is that all your questions on this? Or?
Yeah, number two fell by the wayside, so that's no longer a concern. Number three there, let's see. The property back from second position in Florida. Yeah, she wants to put $2,000 down and $300 a month, but we're into this thing for like $25,000 now because it took 2 years to get through foreclosure in Florida. So that added almost, you know, $9,100 to our in money so far. Just wondering how to structure this. I was going to consider an initial loan up front in order for her to pay back the legal costs at a minimum before we start amortizing her regular debt back to us. What's your thought on that strategy?
Have you already foreclosed? Do you have title to the property?
Yes.
There
is a first.
You have probably done the only way to do a legal subject to. Do you realize that?
Okay.
If you have a second lien and you foreclose, then you foreclosed subject to the first lien. You didn't assume it, but foreclosed subject to it.
I understand. Yep.
Okay. So you did a legal subject to.
Right.
Which all these people that took all these crazy money on subject twos, if they understood they could do it that way, they may have changed how they did it. But that's a whole other subject. But I would not do a land contract in Florida because Florida is one of the states that you gain nothing by doing a land contract. It's the same legal process to foreclose.
Oh, okay.
You do not want to do a land contract in Florida because it is not going to save you any time.
Okay.
So I just say you do a lease option with them and just have them prove their way out of it.
Okay. On your website, do you have a list of attorneys? Should we want to? I don't want to use the same one I used for the foreclosure. If I need to.
I'm not your guy to ask all that. There is a lot of attorneys listed on the site. I don't know if there's one specifically down there, but I tell you something that students don't use near enough is also the form.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, but I know you can ask around, do it. Matt's showing us what's on there, and there should be a list of some attorneys. What part of Florida is this?
West Palm Beach.
Oh, where the rich people live.
Not particularly in this section.
Really? A poor section of West Palm?
120.
This house is probably only worth about $87,000, $90,000.
Really?
Yep.
All right. Okay, cool. All right, guys. Am I answering your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Eddie.
All right, good to talk to you. All right, Matt, I know we had one more question from Fred Boyd. Can you bring him up? He had a wrap question. I think we've probably already covered it. I just want to make sure we're squared away with it.
Go ahead, Fred.
Hey, Eddie.
What's up, bud?
Going through all the seller financing information I can find on the website, and you have that nice intent to wrap letter that you would send to a bank as a seller in order to sort of get permission so that they don't enforce the due on sale clause. How often does that work?
It's not, Fred, I'm telling you that just because you send a letter and you tell the bank, if you don't act in so and so, then, you know, that's just, it's just a bluff. That's all it is.
So do we do it or do we not do it? And if we do it and they say no, where do you go from there?
Who's the bank? Big bank, little bank, community bank? The guy that made you the loan is a loan officer that you know? Is it some kind of gin mill bank with Wells or Bank America? I mean, that's the story. It's the odds are how much are they going to aggravate with you? The first student that came on tonight has a local relationship with a bank branch president, and they darn sure don't want to have her get mad and call the loan on them and learn to ruin the relationship with her, right?
Right.
That's completely different than somebody that just buries it in the middle of wherever. And you see what I'm saying? It's just different. Uh-huh. I mean, you are not going to wash away the risk. Okay? There's no one that I can wave or Dykes Botiford or Jeff Watson or whoever and go, you signed the deed of trust and have a due on sale clause in it, but now all of a sudden you sent some special document and the bank didn't agree to it. You just sent it to them and now all of a sudden it's gone. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, no, I wasn't assuming that would happen. I'm asking how often, if ever, does the bank say okay?
What? That's
I mean, that is what it boils down to. Is they?
I'm not thinking today, Fred, that you would do that.
Okay.
When that model was written, it's not terribly old, but it was just a different environment. And I've already instructed Zarina. She's just trying to rework it. But there's a good bit of stuff we're going to rework about it. You'd ask me a couple of more questions in there that I think is not – I think there's a much faster pony for you to ride. But
okay.
I'm saying to you today that I would not – I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
Now, once again – do I have people all the time that wrap a note that's serviced by some big service shop and they never hear from them? Absolutely. Are you taking the risk they could call the note? Absolutely.
And so if they call the note,
you have to pay them off. To pay them off.
Do you have time to sell the property or what's the...
Well, whatever time it takes for them to foreclose.
Okay.
I mean, you're asking me that, you know, now all of a sudden we're going from thinking like the bank to thinking like the consumer. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just keep your banker's hat on for a minute. If you're the guy at the bank and the guy calls the note and for whatever reason you're riled up about it and you're going to call the note, what's your legal rights? You got to grant him some time to go sell the property?
Probably not.
Probably not. So, I'm just saying, just remember, this is the same bank with the same rights that you've got, no more, no less, than the loans you own. You got to follow the law. You got to foreclose in a manner. And if you have, like, credit facilities or you're sitting on cash or you've got access to capital, it may be a risk you could take. I know people that intentionally wrap notes, and they're like, screw it. If the bank calls a note, I'll just pay them off. I'll refinance it, and I'll pay them off. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you've got that financial wherewithal, you could do that. Now, you do have to disclose that. You can't sell it on a wrap and not disclose it.
You mean disclose it to the buyer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure you know that. I'm not suggesting you wouldn't do that. I'm just making sure you know you do. So you see what I liked about all this conversation tonight with wraps, there's an element of risk. Is it a risk you can take?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And depending on who the lender is and what your situation is it a risk you can take? I can't wash away the due on sale clause.
Yeah, I think we're all just trying to get a clearer picture of what the risk is.
And what I would say is it has all to do with who the servicer is.
Mm-hmm. You mean the originator?
The servicer is the one that's going to pull the trip switch on you.
Okay.
And they're going to do it probably because of the insurance. Could be because of taxes. But it's probably because of insurance. They get the insurance in. You've got Billy Bob Jones on there, and then it's the same story that we just had the conversation with Barb. Just identical story.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the triggering event. So if it's with some big box shop and they're buried with other stuff and problems and they got no reason to trick another loan on the books as non-performing, it may be a risk that you're comfortable taking. I just want to make sure you understand what it is. You're saying, would you take that risk? You're asking me that, right?
Okay, sure. Yes, I'm asking you that.
If I owed $50,000 on a mortgage or $80,000 on a mortgage, and I did a wrap note, and the bank called me and says, Eddie, naughty, naughty, we're going to call the note, I'd say, okay, I'll pay you off.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
I know, I'm confident I could do that. Now, if I had 80 of those, I might not be so confident.
In your experience, if you had 80 of those, how many of them would you expect to get called?
I don't hear them. Well, once again, it depends on who's got the loan. If it's a local community bank or some credit union or somebody that you have a local relationship with, somebody's gonna bring it back to that loan officer, and he's gonna call you up and say, "Dude, what are you doing?" If it's at a big box shop and it's Aquan or it's whoever, you know, one of these big box servicers out here in Texas, it's not, the odds aren't terribly high.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you again.
All right, brother.
Appreciate your experience.
Okay.
And so the second part of that question that he sent in, or second part of a question he sent him, was he wants clarification on a partial buyer. So does the buyer own the note with the right to foreclose, or just the right to the payments, and you as the back end holder has the right to foreclose?
Okay. Our partial agreement, not other people's partial agreement, but our partial agreement says we are assigning this note in its entirety. It's not a fractional. It's not, you're not assigning part of the note. You are assigning the note in its entirety. And they have the legal right to foreclose. Now, it also says that there's a notice of default to be given to you, and it also says that you would mutually have to agree if you're going to move the servicing. So there's some trip switches that we built in there to make sure that the guy ain't foreclosing and wiping our interest and we don't even know about it. But he absolutely has the right to foreclose, yes.
Flip side of that then is, do we as the holders of the back end have the right to foreclose if it goes into default in the front end?
You have the right to buy the loan back.
Okay.
You have a right to pay off the entitlement interest. And Fred, the reason I'm being so careful about this, because there's other people that have other agreements that we don't necessarily totally agree with. We don't dislike the people. We just, it's like there's nothing about this that trips any other legal issues. What? And that's something that when Jeff Watson drafted this agreement, we talked about. The guy has a true first lien position. He has the right to foreclose. If you die, he didn't need to ask your permission.
Right.
Okay? We think that's a legitimate, equitable interest for the buyer. Now, what it also says is he can't go move the servicing or go monkey a bunch of stuff up and you not know about it. But he gets first money in the case of a foreclosure.
Right.
So it doesn't give you the right to initiate a foreclosure action if he doesn't, but it does give you the right to buy him out. Does that make sense?
I've heard it twice now. I think I understand it better than I did the first time I heard it. Maybe by the time it's actually actionable for me, I'll understand it perfectly.
Got it. It takes time. We get that. All right. What else, Mr. Matt?
Just a couple of kind of final, or just kind of reiterating some things, like you try to pull it over. Sorry. Just our upcoming events. I know the Ladies Mastermind is going to start. Emails are going to start coming out and stuff like that. So.
All right, so I know Bob Bullinger had a question from the week before. Did we not get there tonight, I guess?
He sent in a question over the – I can pull him in if we have time.
No, I mean he had had a question from the week before, and I know then we missed it or something on the call, so I'm guessing maybe we missed getting it on the call. It looks like to me really more of something that we would cover on the Tuesday call. It's more like it's a modification question, I think. Or it's a loan, it looks like to me that the loan has not been paying and now they're modifying it. Anyway, we need to make sure that we're figure out what we need to do there, Matt.
We'll look that up and make sure.
Okay. We have several things that should be on your calendar, guys. First of all, we have a Titanium Mastermind. We have sent you guys two emails about it. There's a registration on the unique site, which is noteschool.com/titanium, which is a link that we've given you in the web email. If you haven't received the email, as Bob said today, it's in your junk box because we've given you the best. Every Titanium's the best email we've got. There is an evening event on April 14th. We'll go two full days, the 15th and 16th, and one night there will be a cookout, and the other night we're going to take you to the Rangers game. So this is just for the Titaniums. You need to register, and it'll be a good event. And so if you don't have the email, you can contact Angie, and she will send you the information. Okay? What's all right? So we have sent. We are finalizing, I think, this week. But to put it on your calendar, the Summer Summit is June 3rd and 4th in Dallas. We have a special class on June the 2nd. It's going to be taught by a guy that I mentioned earlier tonight, super sharp guy named Dykes Botiford. This is a really good one-day class. It's basically called Entity Creation for Minimizing Taxes and Maximizing Asset Protection. So it's what entity do you form depending on what your tax ramifications would be and the asset protection would be. So Jeff Watson had highly recommended Dykes for teaching this class. He says he's attended it, thinks it's super good, and I called Dykes, and he was very gracious to do an extremely modified speaker arrangement with us, and so any profit from this goes to the Child Welfare Board. $250 for a primary and $200 for a guest, and there, that does include transportation and dinner at the Fort Worth Stockyards. Okay? Summer Summit, we got all kind of stuff working. And so that is for every Mentor student. We're going to be sending you the registration for it. I think it'll probably come out this week. Just want to make sure you put it on your calendar, save the date. Those of you that bought the dinner with us, the Speeds, we're going to do that on June 4th. That's on Saturday night. We're going to provide transportation from the American Airlines training facility where the event will be to our house in Argyle, Texas. And then we have a class going at the same time, Matt, June 3rd through the 5th. It'll be a Rich Rewards class in the same building. Okay? The Hog Hunt, the money goes for the charity that the Hog Hunt will be March 31st through the 2nd. There is a webinar that is taped if you're interested in getting that webinar. How are they going to do that, Matt? So, it's on the membership site, isn't it?
Correct. So if you at your home page, when you log in, if you just click on this tab right here, it'll take you to both the Women's Mastermind and the Hog Hunt webinars. Yes.
All right, so the Women's Mastermind is my wife Martha's deal. This, neither of these programs are part of the mentorship, although we invite mentorship students first. So we've got several people that are registered for the Hog Hunt, but it's not full. This is a cool deal. If you like hunting and outdoor stuff, it's great charity, and it's a really – there's food. The whole adventure will be fun if that's what you like. Martha's Mastermind is for ladies. Matt, you and I are not invited.
Sorry.
I'm just saying. And what we do is that we provide a lot of things for charity, and this is something that kind of pays for some of the stuff that we do. So not all of it, but it pays for part of it. So this is Martha's Ladies Mastermind. She's had one. It's really fun. The ladies loved it. And anyway, there's a video on there, and you can click on there and watch it if you're interested in doing it. It's like, Matt, it's like the end of April, right at the end, I think the last weekend in April. Okay. All right. Is that everything, Matthew?
I believe that's all we have for tonight. So, and yeah. So.
Yeah. Matt, Bob apparently sent something in this morning. I didn't see it. I'm not sure where it went. Did you see it, Matt?
I see something now. At 7:57 this morning, I have my headset. Yeah.
All right, I know it's terribly late. I apologize. Let's see if we can get Bob on. We'll run through it real quick.
Okay. I've got the question.
Sorry about that. I'll take the blame on this.
No, that's, I should have seen it, so that's my fault. All right. Bob, go ahead.
Hello, Eddie.
Hey, Bob.
Hang on until tomorrow. I don't want to keep it too late here.
Is it, so is this a non-performing note you're modifying?
No, it's already modified. It's re-performing.
Okay, and what's your question?
I've got a buyer for the partial.
Okay.
And he's in bankruptcy. It's been paying for the last 14 months. Payments are good. The payments come directly from the trustee to the servicer. The servicer is going to remain the same. My question is that I don't want to run afoul of any of the Chapter 13 bankruptcy laws.
You got the right to sign that note.
Do I have to notify the trustee, the owner, or the attorney for the borrower?
Okay, you're not. Here's what the deal is going to be, Bob. You have the right to sell your note without anybody's permission. You're not going to change the servicer, right?
Correct.
Okay. Then the only thing that you're going to send is a 404 letter, which is your legal notification that you sold the note. You're not going to send a transfer of servicing letter because you're going to keep servicing the same. Are okay. You legally going to have to give them something? Yes, until a 404 letter.
Okay. Okay, and I seek no permission. I just do it. I send this after the fact.
Who owns the note?
I do. Well, my personal property trust.
All right. Well, then your personal property trust doesn't need to ask anybody's permission.
Okay.
That make sense?
Okay. Are there any? That's the primary questions I had. I had some other questions as far as all the other documentation that I might need to have to go along with that. I had a list of almost 20 items. I wanted to make sure I had everything.
Oh my God! You give me brain damage, dude.
Sorry about that.
I don't know if I'm gonna agree to something like that. I've done about 15,000 partials and I can't think of the 20 documents.
Oh golly. Okay. We'll let that go for this time. All right. I don't want to be responsible for any brain damage, yours or mine.
Let me just make sure you're clear about this, okay?
Okay.
You're selling the note. You're not transferring the servicing. You can sell the principal and interest payments and keep the arrearage payments.
That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Whatever you can do is just don't outthink this deal, man.
Okay. All right. That alleviates a lot of questions and concerns for me. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we've done this like a zillion times. I mean, it's like, you know, if you were transferring the service in, you were doing all this other stuff. Bob, I'm going to tell you this. You heard me say this to somebody earlier tonight. This is a guinea pig deal, but if you'll reach out to Martha, she's going to work with Guardian, and they're going to have a fee arrangement where they'll prepare all the assignments for on a partial.
Okay.
Okay, so if you'll reach out to Martha, I think she'll probably work with you on that.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll touch base with her tomorrow.
We know it's something that people really want to be able to do, and we got it. So it's like, you know, we reached out, and Guardian wants Martha to help them look over their shoulder a little bit because she's very familiar with it, and she's agreed to do that. So we can do that on two or three deals and get them going, then that'll be something that we put on the membership site.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, my friend.
All right, thank you.
Great to talk to you. All right, Mr. Matthew. Be safe, my buddy.
All right, have a good one.
You bet.
Good night, everybody.